You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. National Public Radio dubbed Jason Vio as, quote, perhaps one of the most precise and soulful classical guitarists of his generation. We're about to find out why. Jason Vio is in town for the Juno Jazz and Classics Hybrid Festival. Joins us now in our KTOO studios. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much for being here today. You are the first live guest that I've hosted here in the studio in over a year, and I think you're going to be a tough act to follow.
Aw, thank you.
Well, would you please introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Jason Vio. I'm a classical guitarist and originally from Buffalo, New York, and I started guitar I think maybe like a week or so after my 8th birthday, and I guess we can get into a little bit more of that. Do you want you just know more about my background?
Sure, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you decided that you were going to dedicate your life to classical guitar.
Oh yeah, it's interesting. A lot of it was serendipity because my family background is not really in entertainment or music or anything like that, really. Being from Buffalo, a lot of the industry from my parents' generation and their parents' generation was some of it was on the lakes, you know, because it's Buffalo's on Lake Erie, and so there's I come from a long line of coal passers, you know, that kind of, on Laker boats and stuff. So that's kind of what my dad's line was, and then my father sort of broke from that tradition, and he was an appliance repairman, and my mother was a secretary, and so I got into music really just through discovering their record collection initially when I was 3 years old, and I listened to my dad's jazz records, but mostly I was really into my mom's record collection initially because it was all that great soul R&B kind of stuff from the 50s and 60s, Junior Walker and the All-Stars and Four Tops, Temptations, Wilson Pickett, Aretha Franklin, like the Stax and Motown singles. And then a lot of the rock and roll, like the Beatles. My mom had 4 Beatles LPs, which I completely fell in love with, and Mamas and the Papas and Love and Spoonful and stuff like that. So you know, that's typically what a lot of my parents' generation would have in their record collection. So my mother noticing that I of my own volition, spent most of my free time just listening to records, like listening to music. When I was 5, she brought home a guitar for me from a guitar store. A $50 guitar, probably not realizing that it was a classical guitar. It was actually like a nylon string classical guitar, but like 2/3 of the size of an adult one. And so I just knocked around on it and played things by ear. And the serendipity part was, again, is my mother happened to, for a few years, I think 2 years, she worked as a secretary at my elementary school. The Buffalo Guitar Quartet came to that school to give an outreach program. Not unlike what I'm probably going to be doing for a couple of things around here. This is a residency week for me. Mm-hmm. And so I started taking my first guitar lessons were with a classical guitarist. And I didn't really know any different. So I just started studying with Jeremy Sparks. And that was it. And I just liked it. I was one of those, I was kind of, I guess, unusual in the sense that I would just practice. I would, give me the assignments and homework, essentially, like it would be at school. And I would, and my parents really never had to tell me to practice. So,
Did you ever try to transcribe your Motown favorites from the record collection?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's initially like playing things by ear was what really just came natural to me. And so then as I developed an actual technique with classical guitar, I found that I could actually physically play the things that I was already hearing by ear. So like a lot of the top 40 and stuff that was on the radio, my brother and sister would get a kick out of me playing like a Human League or something like that, or, you know, Duran Duran or something that was on the radio. in those days. So, yeah. They would knock them out. They'd be like, wait a minute, that's like sounds like, you know, and I'd even kind of imitate the sound of, try to imitate the sound of the synthesizer or the bass guitar or the drum, you know, thing or whatever it was. And those kind of things, if you have a predilection to that, like if you have an aptitude for that, they really develop when you have a lot of, when you start learning a lot of technique, because then you can play what you, more often what you already are kind of hearing in your head.
Yeah.
You sort of you pick it out or transcribe it off the radio, you know. And then it, and then later in high school it was like Steely Dan solos and stuff like that, you know.
And you've also transcribed a number of classical composers.
Yeah, classical composers. I do a lot of arrangements of jazz things and popular music. I'll play one of those today for you. Like, I mean, one of them that the audiences seem to like is What a Wonderful World, which is a well-known song, of course.
Excellent. Well, as a professional musician, now that you are all grown up, what are some other things that you're known for? What makes you stand out?
I don't know. I just I think the thing for me that is that I don't really concentrate very much on that aspect of it. I'm so very much involved in what I'm doing because I do a lot of different things. I mean, I play concertos with orchestra. I do a lot of world premieres, like probably about two, sometimes even three a year, either for solo guitar, chamber music with other instruments, or guitar and orchestra. And that in particular, the last 10 years has really been a focus. And playing solo recitals and going to chamber music festivals and curating a guitar-oriented program for their audience. And it's just kind of like I just kind of go around and I can do things like that, kind of create things that are programs for a particular audience.
All right. Well, let's get to the music. I can't wait any longer. First live music we've had in Studio 2K here at KTOO.
Why don't I play What a Wonderful World?
Thanks, Jason. Thank you. That was so beautiful.
Thank you.
A little more emotional than I thought I would be. I have our first live musician in the studio after so long. What was this last year like for you as a performer?
Oh, it was horrible. It was, yeah. Especially because, I mean, I really enjoy the whole thing. I'm very much like a road dog in that sense. I like the hotels and, I mean, the flying is a bit boring, but it's all, you know, all the stuff that you have to do to play music for people. My audience is very much, I think, really connected in that way to me. Like, they listen really hard, if that makes sense. And so being away from them for quite a long time was really disorienting for me. But the upside was, the thing that was nice about it, I was able to spend more time, of course, a lot more time with my wife and kids at home. So that was really good. And I think we got to bond in a way that we didn't, you know, we wouldn't normally quite get to do. So,
what kind of guitar do you play there?
The guitar is made by a German luthier named Gernot Wagner. And Wagner is based in Frankfurt. And, yeah, he makes very, very nice instruments. I've been playing his guitars for about, I want to say, almost about 15 years now.
And you don't use a pick. You have a really original and unique method to play. Will you tell us about your thumbnail there?
Well, the nails, playing with nails is the standard way of course, playing classical guitar. Because as you heard with my arrangement of What a Wonderful World, there's a bass line happening, there's a groove happening with the other two fingers of the right hand. And then I'm playing the melody with various fingers of my right hand all at the same time. So that's basically what we think of on the guitar as a classical technique, a classically trained kind of technique. The thing that is, I guess, unique to me and something that NPR really latched onto years ago. Oh, gosh, I mean, this is almost 20 years ago now. It's amazing. When I was a young artist in residence on NPR in 2002 for Performance Today when it was in D.C. And they wanted to do a whole segment on me actually making one of these ping pong ball nails, which is, so what I use, I call it the professional necessity. My actual thumbnail, unlike my other three nails that I use, we use four of our five nails for plucking. And unlike the other three, my real thumbnail doesn't really grow long enough to do what I need it to do. And so the ping pong ball actually is the most standard, I mean, in our little fishbowl, it's the most common replacement or substitute for when you break a nail. Like if I was on the way to the radio station here today and I used my right hand to open the car door, which I would never do as a guitarist, right? And I smashed one of my nails, I would have like a replacement. You know, I always have a ping pong ball in my guitar case for that reason, and a tube of crazy glue and all that stuff. Yeah, the nail file, the Revlon nail file, and the automotive grade sandpaper and all these things. Although I don't have a lot of stuff in my kit. I have to say, some guitarists, man, they got like a lot of things. They got 15 different grades of sandpaper. I just have the one and the nail file, and that's it.
Well, that's really interesting. Definitely something new I learned today.
And if you learn something new every day, your day is not wasted. That's my advice.
Well, you're here today to perform at Juno Jazz and Classics, and a big part of that is Zool Bailey. Tell me about your relationship to Zool Bailey. How did you get connected to him and to the festival?
Zool and I have a lot of mutual friends in the classical music world, and Zool is you know, one of the great cello soloists, and he came. You know, I had a lot of friends tell me, "Oh, you should know Zool." And it's like I knew his name, but I had never really met him. And he came and gave a master class at one of the conservatories that I teach at. I'm based in Cleveland, and he came to Cleveland Institute of Music, and to do a class, like a master class. And so, so I said hello to him then, and then I kind of kept in touch with him a little bit later, and then he brought me to his El Paso series, and I did that solo. I was a soloist with the symphony, El Paso Symphony, and did a solo recital, and again, various outreach. There are a lot of them are structured similarly. You do a lot of outreach to the community, and radio and such. And he felt that that was a success and brought me to Mesa, Arizona, to another one of the things that he has with a famous harpist that I've played with for years, Yolanda Condonassis. And then he said, I'm going to bring you to, you got to come to Alaska. And I told him, I said, you know, I have a lot of, my family, my last name has a lot of connection to Juneau in that my great-great-great-great-grandfather, Jacques Viau, was a fur trader and from Quebec, and he settled the first trading post in what later became Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was the first non-Native American, basically, there. And he traded peacefully and lived amongst the Menominee tribe, and he married a Menominee woman. And and they basically did business with him, like, his whole life. But as his trading post and his stature in the community grew, he needed a partner. And so he hired Solomon Juneau as his partner there. And Solomon Juneau's cousin founded Juneau, Alaska.
That is quite a story. I had not read that about you in my research. So is this your first time in Alaska?
This is my first. I have been to Fairbanks as a soloist with a symphony a couple times, but never to Juneau. So this is my first time in Juneau. I had always wanted to come to Juneau, again, because of my family history. If you look in Wikipedia, my four greats grandfather is there. If you look up Juneau, and then go, and Solomon's name is in there too.
Wow.
So, yeah.
All right. So do you draw inspiration from places like this with such dramatic landscapes, or is inspiration coming from other places?
I'm just happy to see them. I mean, they're just really beautiful. I didn't realize, it's different from Fairbanks. Okay, so it's like there's that. I mean, I was not prepared for how beautiful it is. I mean, I can't wait to, we're trying to schedule like a whale watching tour or something where I can get around and really get up and close to the mountains or anything like that is great. I was blown away as we landed. I was struck by how close to the mountains you are when you're landing. You're kind of landing in a valley, right?
Yeah.
They call it, and then later, as I got here last night, I found out that this where I'm staying is actually called the Valley.
Yes, that's right. So, yeah. So I wanted to ask, you know, what else are you planning to do while you're here in Juneau?
Well, that's it.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, you did.
I think I'm only going to have time for like one kind of sightseeing thing, and it's going to be, I think we're hooking up a whale watch type of thing.
Excellent.
Yeah, on a boat.
Do you compose original music?
I do. Would you like to hear one? Would you like to hear one of my tunes?
Yes, let's hear it.
Well, the one I have that I'm playing, if you come to the Jazz and Classics, I'm playing that in the program, but it's too long, I think, really, to play on the radio. I started writing a lot more. I wrote wrote an entire record of worth of music, well over 60 minutes, actually. During the pandemic, because when all these performing musicians' concerts were canceled, I mean, for everything was kind of wiped out for a year going forward. And the first 2 months, while I became acclimated to actually being home every day, which is very strange, I've been on the road for like 25 years, not continuously, but the last 15 years, more than half of the year, every single year, year in, year out. The last 10 years, like two-thirds of the year for sure. And so it was awesome. But I had to really become used to being home every day, and since there was nothing to prepare, I was like an animal. I would just prepare music for the next week and the next week after that, and next week. You know, I play about 8 or 9 hours of music every year, different music, and so I was like, well, what do I do? I didn't know what to do with myself because I wasn't used to. I hadn't practiced just to practice the guitar just to keep up my chops since I was like a kid. So my wife told me when she met me, she's like, you should write music because I'm always coming up with stuff anyway and improvising and stuff. And she said, you probably could, 10 years ago, I was like, yeah, I mean, I could write. I just, there's absolutely no time for it. So we agreed that would be the good time, way to pass, to use that time, because I was probably never going to get it back again. You know, during the pandemic was a really golden opportunity. I wrote tons of stuff. So, and I'm performing them now in concerts, which is nice.
Great. You think you'll release an album?
That's good. Yeah, that's in the works. And the record company is like very interested in a record, in an actual being one of the future CDs. We got to get the Bach CD out first. But that's coming in October.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's all that's next. What else is next for you after Juno Jazz and Classics?
Basically that. I mean, I got a date with Pittsburgh Symphony coming up a couple weeks after that. And then I'm at Steamboat, Colorado with Julian Lebro, longtime collaborator on the jazz. He's a jazz accordion player. And that's at the end of June. So not tons of stuff, not what I'm used to. I mean, it's like two gigs in June. There's like I'm playing with Branford Marsalis. We're doing a world premiere of a soprano saxophone and guitar piece. That is super exciting because I listened to Branford on all those Sting records, solo records, when I was in high school and college. I was a huge fan of those records. And Branford and his brother Winton and stuff. So that's really exciting. That's in July. A couple other gigs in July around there in August that go to Napa and Moab for festivals. And so, yeah, it's what's happening really is it's starting to come back, like in these little in dribs and drabs and stuff. So I'm definitely, my hands are full, you know, in the summer with repertoire because all those gigs are different. They're all different music. And the Branford, the piece is written by Pierre Jalbert. And so that's an actual piece, like, you know, 16 minutes. So I'm going to be very busy getting that ready as soon as I come back from Juno. But I'm going to enjoy this time. This is a nice time for me. It's very real. I already know all these pieces pretty well. So I'm going to just enjoy this.
Well, I would be honored if you'd play us another one.
Sure. So this is Misionera by Fernando Bustamante. This is from Argentina. And this will be part of my Wide World of Guitar on Thursday at 5:30 and 7:30 shows. And this is arranged for the guitar by Jorge Morel.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Jason Vio. Well, you are, I would say, the headliner, at least one of the main performers of Juno Jazz and Classics this year, happening this week. And we really appreciate you playing for us today here on Juno Afternoon, considering your concerts are already sold out.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Thank you.
Well, I think that everybody was really ready for this. And Juno is ready to get out and about and see some live performances. But I'm just so honored that you could be here today and play for us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for being here. All right. Well, my first guest back. I don't even know how to wrap this up. I forget all the things that we used to do. But thanks so much for being here, Jason Vio, and have a great time while you're here in Juneau.
Thank you. Will do.